Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your Wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah. Welcome to the Wealth DNA radio show, and let me ask you, did your Wealth DNA improve in 2011? Can you imagine in less than 1 week we'll be closing out 2011 and welcoming in 2012? The saying is that time flies when you're having fun, right? Well, I certainly am having fun. This time has been flying. Yes, there were some sad times and many challenges this year, but overall I'm very pleased with the way the year has worked out. We've been able to help more people become homeowners than any prior year, and it seems we're making progress in turning 1 million people into millionaires. That's one of my key long-term objectives. Today is the second day of Christmas. It's Monday, December 26th, 2011. It's 8 a.m. in Phoenix, Arizona, and as usual, you can expect it's sunny, dry, and warm. It's 4 p.m. in continental Europe, and for those wondering about the European and U.S. equity markets, they are closed due to observing the holiday. And since the start of Hanukkah this year, the days are getting longer. Maybe the pessimist would say that the nights are getting shorter. And I'm just going to check if we have the chat window up, because I will later on mention that, and I didn't see it yet, but hopefully Pete will notice. Oh, is it up there? No, I don't see the chat window up yet. Pete, you might want to just get that up while we're getting started here so that our guests and listeners can post some comments or questions. So Pete, please do take a look if you can get that chat window up. Okay, chances are you and 90% of your friends and family are off due to the holiday today. So what a great chance to gather the family around the radio and chat with me about your year, your 2011 resolutions, and your plans for 2012. I'll, of course, share mine as well, but do look forward to getting some comments from you. Before we dig in honor of these wonderful holidays, let's cover some basic history. That's the reason for this time of year and this time off from work for so many people in the world. Christians celebrate the birth of the Christ child and the beginning of Christianity. Recall, Christianity had its roots in Judaism, and some of the Jews at that time of his birth were so busy celebrating Hanukkah to pay any attention to the news that some crazy shepherds and a few wise men were sharing about a Messiah being born in a barn. Many of those Jews later converted to Christianity. Some remained as Jews, and some today celebrate both faiths, a growing group called Jews for Jesus. Today is, as I mentioned, the second day of Christmas. Recall, there were 12 days due to the time it took the wise men to travel to see him. Those 12 days are not, as most Americans think, they are not before Christmas Day. Christmas did not end on Christmas Day or the first day of Christmas. It just began. So there are 11 days ahead of us, or 10 ahead of today, and today is the sixth day of Hanukkah. Neither Christmas nor Hanukkah are one-day events. They're celebrations of the days surrounding the event. Okay, one last bit of historical trivia for you. My last name, Naraki, is Polish, and by the way, the pronunciation, if you want to twist your tongue, is pronounced Nawrocki, and it means simply converted. So frankly, my ancestors were both Jews and Christians, so I kind of feel an affinity to both. You're listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, or Nawrocki if you prefer, and look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday throughout the new year. And I don't see the chat window up. I wonder if I can get a message out to Pete here to get that up, so I would like to get comments and your New Year's resolutions. Well, I should be able to see them if you... No, I can only see my own comments at the moment. All right. Well, he may be working on that. Here are my thoughts for what we cover today. your and my resolutions for 2011. And maybe we'll focus on the failures so we can close that out, those out this week and move on to the successes. Review and share with our new listeners what the Wealth DNA framework is all about and what it takes to improve your chances of becoming truly wealthy. Thirdly, I thought we'd cover a brief summary of the topics and guests this past year, bringing up a few highlights. And all of them are programmed in a way to help you improve your Wealth DNA. And lastly, what my advisors are telling me is in store for 2012 and beyond. What are your thoughts for what we chat about? Feel free to call in, and once the chat window's working on the bottom, you can also type it in a chat. But our call-in number is 917-388-4162. Let me repeat that number. It's 917-388-4162. And if you look at the very top of the screen, if you're looking through the internet, you'll see that number to call in. So feel free to use that. We will hopefully get the chat window working here on the bottom. You'll be able to send me your messages as well. First, let's talk about your 2011 resolutions. Most importantly, did you write them down? And did you review them periodically? Would you like to share some of yours? And as I said, give me a call. All right, once we get the chat window working here, you can just type them in there. I'd love to hear back from you. In the meantime, let me share some of my resolutions. And I'll focus on the failures above all to learn from them, put them behind me for 2011, and get a fresh start in 2012. Now, those of you that listened a year ago, a little less than a year ago, would know that I subdivided mine into personal versus business. Let me start with the personal. First is to smile daily. The idea is to appreciate the blessings I have. Well, on this one, I failed. I smile too seldom, and even though I'm very thankful for the blessings I have, I don't let that appreciation be seen by others quite enough. Now, when we celebrated Thanksgiving Day in the U.S., one of the best holidays of the year, I mentioned it's a great holiday because it helps me and hopefully helps you get back to the attitude of gratitude. And that's what helps me find a reason to smile every day. And yet, I don't do it often enough. The second was to balance personal life with business. Ooh, boy, I failed. It was a very hectic year. About 90% or more of my time and effort and investment was in the business and helping our clients, meaning my family has been second priority, not something I'm proud of. Take Sundays off. Well, this one I not only failed, but I did it miserably. Even Christmas Day falling on a Sunday was only 40 or 50% spent with family. This one I did okay on. Ignore advice from non-experts. You know, you talk to them all the time. The person who's not a doctor telling you what you should do to get better. My resolution was just to smile and thank them. As I said, I did okay on this. When someone hasn't demonstrated their ability on a particular topic, be it a person in medicine, that they're not, or a person who claims to know all about finance, just doesn't have two nickels to rub together, I listen politely, nod, or thank them, and move on. Even from bad ideas, you can learn something. You can learn what others do. Another resolution was to keep my desk clear, organize the office. You know, it's hard to focus on one or two key things if you have 112 on your desk. Well, I failed. Only three times this year was my desk cleared. The beginning of the year, after our office fire in June, and for Christmas. And even today, the second day of Christmas, I've got a stack of things to do and deal with on my desk for the next week that'll take a month to do. I did implement a better filing system for projects I'm working on yesterday. Yes, on Christmas Day, I ordered some software to make my writing and even preparing my radio shows more efficient. And that's the objective of being organized. Be more efficient. Take better advantage of time. Each of us have the same amount of time, and yet we don't all take advantage of it as well as others do. Next one was to do some projects around the house in the first and second quarter, get them done. I did okay on this, but there's a problem. Half of them were destroyed by the fire, and the other half I was forced to do as our office and home were rebuilt, or are being rebuilt, not even finished yet. The easiest one of my personal ones was to lose 4 pounds and keep it off. My objective, though, was to do it by the end of January. I did okay. I accomplished it, but several months later. Prior to Christmas, I was actually 3 pounds below my target weight. I'll come back to that topic later. How about my business goals for 2011? First, foremost, and probably most important, was to prioritize and finish the top 10 tasks each day before moving on to the next ones. And I shared with you last year why that's so important and how that concept came about and being so well known. I did not do well. I unfortunately have a list of about 20 things each day. Some get done, others don't. It really has to be set up as the top five before you move on to the next five and then the next 10 to work on. And it's worth those minutes in the day to pull it together. You know that'll be back on my resolutions for 2012. Here's the toughest one. Make the TACT program known in all local banks, not meaning Arizona banks. Implement it in 10 of them. Ugh. I did a very good start to the year. In January, since it's our number one priority for both the company as well as, quite frankly, the economy, I got moving. Did some good progress in January. But here's the unfortunate thing. Those urgent priorities consumed my time. At the expense of this priority, the most important project I have in front of me. Let me repeat that point because it's probably the most important thing you can keep in mind. Urgent priorities consumed my time at the expense of this, the most important project. It's a problem each of us need to learn to deal with. I don't care what you do in life. Urgent things like phone calls. I mean, when it's ringing, you got to answer it. I mean, eventually it's going to drive you crazy, right? How about scheduled meetings? They're on the calendar. I got to go. Someone else needing help with their important projects saying, I need you to do this. These urgent things stop us from getting our important projects done. And recall that every problem, and this is a problem, is indeed an opportunity. So we've got to find ways to turn them into opportunities. Okay, my next one, I only got a couple more here, is to make the IRA Builder, a new solution we developed back in 2010, a huge success in 2011. And I made it very specific, 24 or more deals, means two a month. Well, I did okay on this. We only did about a third of that volume, I think it was 8 or 9 deals. We got the program working smoothly. We got the process set. We got the flyers, examples, and contracts all organized and put together so we can grow this program a lot faster in the future. Now, it's interesting, on this particular, or these particular IRA builder solutions, our clients aren't charged a fee for doing them. They get 80% of the profits earned and avoid some substantial taxes, a hell of a deal for our clients, so it's not hard to attract them. Now, most companies having a situation like that would raise their fees. I choose to continue to make it attractive to the clients. Why? Because we'll have plenty of clients without spending money on advertising, probably forever. All right, my next objective, a big one, very specific, bring in $1 million or more in new private mortgage loans. I did okay on this, believe it or not. See, I thought our seminar series, which we kicked off a year ago, would have more impact. But it takes time for people to not only learn, but then to compare and decide and retest and then relearn. I haven't added all the numbers up yet, but it's about $750,000. A little lower than the goal, but about 10 times what we did in 2010 because we were too busy working on the urgent. So a pretty good stride forward. I feel good about that one. Anyway, and a few others, very specific ones. In the first quarter, we would launch our creative financing for realtors, a creative financing course. Well, we failed in the timing. We're far from ready. I guess I should have said what year, huh? Well, that was supposed to be 2011. First quarter of 2011, I also was supposed to file my taxes and get all the legal documents ready for BI Solutions Corp. so that We didn't have to do extensions and delay everything else, and that one was done. So another success. And then the final one. No, I'm sorry, there's two more. My mistake. So this semifinal here, second to last, is to set up an asset protection strategy. We've actually kind of taken that off the calendar. We've decided it's not as important as other things that we've got to do. It's important. And last, delegate. Delegate accounting, contract signing, getting a virtual assistant, a VA, as we affectionately call it, for websites and seminars. Seminar marketing, set up a private mortgage lending sales channel. I'd give myself a C- for this. Some good progress, but boy, when I look at my time schedule, just not enough. Now the big question, how did you do? Here's my suggestion for grading yourself, okay, just to give you a thought starter. If you didn't write down your resolutions, give yourself an F. You see, your plan failed since you failed the plan. You guaranteed failure. Now, so if you wrote them down and then didn't get around to reviewing and revisiting periodically, give yourself a D. There is hope. You didn't fail. You wrote them down. You took the first step. Now, if you wrote them down, you reviewed them, then regardless of how many of them were successes and how many were failures, give yourself a B. It shows you have the desire and the discipline to be truly wealthy. Regular listeners probably just realized that I transitioned to our second topic today, wealth DNA. Yeah, that's the name of the radio show, too. And a reminder to those who just tuned in, you're listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday throughout the new year and beyond, of course. We would like to still hear from a few listeners and their resolutions and how they did. And you can call us. Feel free to call us on the number that's top of the webpage. It says 917-388-4162. And still trying to get the chat window up here. I don't know, Pete, if you're working on that. Hopefully you are, but I don't see the chat window. But that'd be another way to contact us, is through the chat window below. Hopefully we'll get that up here shortly for you. So we would like to hear your resolutions on how you did. And easiest to right now would be to call us, 917-388-4162. Okay, let's cover the Wealth DNA Frequently Asked Questions, or FAQs, as we often see them on websites, right? First question is, what is the Wealth DNA Framework? Okay, we got to understand that before we go any deeper. DNA stands for the three obstacles to becoming wealthy. The book on this topic is not yet released. It's still being worked on. Should be part of my resolutions to get it done, shouldn't it? Well, that's the first. Now, how about the second question that comes up? Am I born with a wealth DNA level, and then just stuck with it? In other words, my wealth is predestined? Happily, the answer is no. We're all born with the same wealth DNA. None of us knew that one piece of paper with a particular shape and a particular colors and specific symbols was worth 1,000 times more than some bigger sheet of paper. DNA are the obstacles we all face. We weren't born with them. Some will overcome the first of these obstacles, and that's a good first step. A few people will overcome two of them. And historically, we're trying to change that historical trend. See, historically, only 1% to 2% of the population overcame all three obstacles. Those are the few people that become truly wealthy. Next question in the frequently asked questions, well, how do I know if my wealth DNA is improving? Well, by working on each of the three obstacles at least monthly. In this show, we give you an opportunity twice a month, every second and fourth Monday. All right, and then the big question, and we'll spend a little time answering this, what are those three obstacles that keep me from being wealthy? Well, the DNA is an acronym to help you remember. And each of the obstacles also has a PS, a postscript, to help remember it. For the overall book or the overall concept of Wealth DNA, the PS is simply, you only reap what you sow. You see, I can't reap what you sow. I also need to do all the right things and sow some of the right seeds to reap what I sow, to become wealthy. I need to do it, not somebody else for me. Okay, what's the D stand for? D stands for desire. And if you were writing a few things down in addition to your resolutions, hopefully for 2012, you might want to put these down. The D is for desire. And most of you will say, okay, come on, I want to be wealthy. That's no problem. I have the desire. And unfortunately, as we cover this topic in more detail, not today, but in future shows, you'll find out just the opposite. Consciously, you say you want to be wealthy, but most people's subconscious has been programmed for poverty, programmed by our parents, our teachers, and everybody around us. Unfortunately, mostly by our friends. Now, in December of 2010, just a year ago, we talked with Dr. Michael Carlton right on this show. We talked about the addiction to poverty. It's a topic he introduced me to that helped launch the Wealth DNA concept. Now, to the whole section of desire in that book, the PS is very simply. P stands for prepare and S for soil. So the PS is prepare the soil. You see, if you don't have the desire, it's kind of like hard desert soil around us that hasn't been prepared and watered. Nothing will grow, and you won't reap much of what you don't sow. And even if you do sow it on that hard soil, not much will happen. Many people have suggested, as I talked to them, that the D probably should stand for determination. And there's a lot of truth to that, because it does take determination. And I've drawn the analogy of being wealthy and losing weight. But I would say that without the desire, determination is not enough. It's necessary, but not enough, not sufficient, as the mathematicians would say. If your desire is strong enough, the determination follows. And that's why you may say you want to be wealthy, and yet the statistics are against you, because you've been programmed for poverty. All right, what's this, the N stand for? The N stands for knowledge, the second obstacle. That's the most talked about concept in investment articles, seminars, and books. They talk about the knowledge aspect, what you need to do to invest. On this radio show, of course, we share a lot of the knowledge I've gained in my journey toward becoming wealthy. And yes, English majors, teachers, and all of those, I know that knowledge is spelled with a K. So whether you call it knowledge or just knowledge, that's what we cover, and that's what we're talking about. It's the knowledge that's the second obstacle. Becoming wealthy, you see, is a lifelong journey. You don't just look forward to arriving. The best is when you enjoy the journey. Unless your parents were wealthy, you left school and entered the workforce with very little knowledge, or knowledge if you prefer, about building wealth. Our school systems around the world fail miserably in this regard. This is a topic I even asked Danny Kofke about. Remember in just our last show in December, Danny Kofke is a teacher and an author on personal finance. I said, did you take courses in personal finance? He said, no. And that's the problem. There are none. Now, there's a PS to this section on knowledge. Pick your seeds. After you've prepared the soil, you see, you still can't reap pumpkins where you plant corn, and you can't reap potatoes where you planted potato chips. You need the knowledge of various investment alternatives, economic cycles, and the best timing for each alternative. That's the knowledge part of investing. And then the A, the toughest obstacle of all, the final obstacle. When you truly have the desire, you've gained the knowledge, you're not done. Nothing happens if you don't take action, and that's the A is for action. You see, a PhD that keeps taking postgraduate courses to avoid getting out into the real world will not be any more successful than you or I. And even, well, I would say I'll even share, because I use the PhD as an example, a major contrast. I think you kind of have fun with this. I even tell people that I never finished the fourth grade, which, by the way, is true, but only part of the story. So I'll leave you hanging on that one. The PS to the action is very simply plant those seeds. No matter how much you prepare the soil and analyze which seeds to plant, if you don't plant them, they will not grow. And remember, you cannot reap what you do not sow. Simple concepts, just not easy without the true desire, and yes, that determination, the knowledge, and taking action. Wealth DNA. Now, while we went through that, I mentioned two shows in the past year, and I didn't share with you when doing that how to find them. We maintain an archive of past shows on www.wealthdna.us. We also provide the links for future shows. At the bottom of that web page, if you scroll down through the earliest shows, you can enter your name and email address to be added to our announcements about this show. So you'll be posted shortly before each show comes out, along with the radio link, and the links, of course, are on that website. Now, let me remind our radio audience, since we're partway through the show here, you're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. Our third topic today, unless you change my mind and we go back to one of the other two, or you want to add some topics, is to remind you of some of the great topics and guests we had during 2011. So if you missed a show, hopefully we'll entice you to go back to the wealthdna.us website and find that link and listen to that show. And what better time than great holidays and preparing for the new year than to build that knowledge, to help build your desire, get you ready for action. Okay, in January, we covered SMART goals, and we focused specifically on resolutions. I also shared mine. Yep, I had the courage to share mine, and I just shared with you how I did on them. Too many resolutions? Maybe. And of course, you can't accomplish them all. And that's why it's not critical you accomplish all of them, because then it probably meant you either didn't have enough, or you made them too easy. The key is to write them down and keep looking at them, reviewing them, and you may even change the priorities some. That's okay. That is a great show to re-listen to as you prepare your resolutions for 2012. And just yesterday, I reminded my wife to do just that. Listen to that show and pull together her resolutions. I'll do it too. In February, we had one of our most important shows on inflation. Remember, with Don Goldwater. Despite what the U.S. government statistics show about low inflation, U.S. inflation has actually been running about 8% or more on the old basket of goods that used to be used before the government started tinkering with the CPI measure to make it look lower. Now, as I researched the topic of CPI before and after that show, CPI, of course, Consumer Price Index, the CPI calculation, the more I realized that the only thing, and it's heavily weighted, the only thing keeping government stats low right now is housing prices. They're so low and have continued to decline, they've helped the CPI look low. But that doesn't mean that what you spend your money on every day is going up so little. It actually is going up a lot more. Now, in March, we had Russ Wiles of the Arizona Republic on the show, and a few months later, I happened to run into him in an economics presentation, so he does stay on top of these things, as I do. In April, we switched our current format to our current format. We at that time, we were running one show a month to get the whole thing rolling and started and get myself into the organized mode of being able to do at least the one show a month, and we switched to two shows in April. We brought you the first of the Ten Commandments. Ah, very important concepts, the fundamentals. We haven't shared all of them yet, but we did bring you the first commandment in April. We also had Michael Jameson on the show, and recall he's the business liaison for Congressman Trent Franks. That's the congressman for the district where our office is. And it turns out, in talking to him, there are people in the government that will help small businesses. Amazing, isn't it? Unfortunately, there are too few like him. Now, in May, we had two more Michaels on our show. This was purely coincidence, I assure you. Michael DeHusselaar, very tough name to spell, with the Arizona SBDC. I had it written wrong in my notes here. SBDC, Small Business Development Council. Another group in the government that will help small businesses. If you're a small business and you haven't called them and asked them to sit down with you and see what they can help you with, you're not doing yourself a service. I look forward to spending more time with Michael sometime in January. We also had Michael Orr. Now, there was another highlight, I think, of the year. He knows more about the Phoenix housing market trends than anyone else. Anyone. In May, he said his lead indicators, and he shared the indicators and what sequence he looks at them and how much are, you know, which are longer term, which are shorter term, and which are lagging. His lead indicators show that housing prices in Phoenix could or should bottom in around October. Now, that's a pretty important statement for home providers like my company. When I shared this with other so-called housing experts, and also with realtors and with homeowners, I got a pretty skeptical reaction. And generally the question, oh yeah, what year? We will have Michael Orr back, hopefully shortly. Today, I won't spoil the info that he'll share with you on that show, part of which I don't know yet. He keeps updating it. He knows this stuff. Although I follow him and I look at his website and his information regularly, he clearly has a better pulse on the market than I do. And trust me, I watch it carefully. In June, we had J.P. Dada of Entrust Arizona explaining how, and that show was probably one of our longer ones because we had so much to cover about what a true self-directed IRA is and how it works and the broad range of investments possible. Unlike, or maybe contrary to what Wall Street and the bankers try to convince you, that only financial instruments traded on the stock exchanges are allowed. Wrong. The very next day after that show was a memorable day. I'll always remember where I was when I was on that occurrence. Kind of like 9/11 or when John F. Kennedy was shot. You know, one of those days you'll always remember. Why? Well, see, after that show, I happened to be doing a seminar at Entrust Arizona, so at J.P. Dada's offices, and one of those things happened that we never think will happen, just like John F. Kennedy being shot or 9/11, as I mentioned. Our office burned while the whole team was at the seminar. The event definitely screwed up my plans for the year and also had to reschedule my trip to Europe by a few days. Amazing. When you see that devastation and the stench and the mess and all of your work all over the floor, they saved a lot. But boy, a memorable day for me, June 14th. Now, in June, we also had Kimber Lanning of Arizona Local First as a guest. Much like the anti-Wall Street protests we've seen around the U.S., she started a group of local Arizona businesses that encourage consumers to shop locally. Much more positive concept. And by the way, investing and shopping locally has much more impact on the local economy than buying from national chains or investing on Wall Street. Yeah, I know those national chains may be having an office or a store in your community, but most of the money goes back to somewhere else in the world where they buy their products. It doesn't get reinvested in your community. And trust me, unless you're living in Manhattan or you're living where all of the companies are headquartered in, let's say, Delaware, then investing on Wall Street doesn't help your community either. In July, we did a three-part series on OPM. You all remember what that stands for, Other People's Money. Now, the reason we did that many shows on, well, it's an important topic, first of all, but it is the single biggest excuse people have for not investing. Well, we took that excuse away. The excuse they use is, I don't have enough money. In that series, we shared 5.5 strategies. I use them all. How about you? You say, I don't remember 5.5 strategies. Well, listen to those three shows, and then I think it was the following show or one afterwards, I shared the other half, something I forgot to add to the credit cards. do that. So if you're the one that says, I don't have enough money to really have investment make a difference in my life, listen to those shows, among the others. I use them all. How about you? Anyway, how about maybe listening? We'll also get OPM on your resolutions for 2012. You may not have noticed. It was a key one on mine. In 2011, as a result of that resolution, and maybe as a result of organizing the materials for the show, because quite frankly, when you put a show like this together, you have to make sure you understand it and organize it, right? Well, I made more money using OPM in 2011 than any prior year. I guess putting these shows together puts me in the mood for action. It also reminds me of some of the strategies I'm not taking full advantage of. So no listener can accuse me of not walking the talk. Because what I share with you on the show, I use, and I know it works. Okay, moving ahead through the year, August 22nd, check that date, write it down, relook at wealthdna.us, might turn out to be the pinnacle of shows in 2011. You see, I made a lot of money during the market volatility using the simple strategy I outlined. We talked about ETFs, and I specifically talked about using ETFs to create a bull bear portfolio. I had no idea how good my timing was in bringing that to you, how volatile the markets would be after that. It has looked like a yo-yo. Start it and end it pretty much at the same level, and yet there's money to be made. And with a bull bear portfolio, if you did nothing other than hold it, you wouldn't lose money. But if you trade it, you can make some nice returns. Now, on the very next show we brought you, maybe not as well thought through as now looking in hindsight, very well timed, we brought you the second commandment, investing. It really was good timing. You see, the bull bear portfolio is outside the box. It took me a while to adopt that idea. It was first introduced to me in either 1999 or in 2000 by a stalwart, a gentleman that started the mutual fund or investment fund industry, John Templeton. He was on one of my favorite investment shows, and he talked about how the next century would look. He was in his 90s at the time. And his predictions are important because he's been there. He understands it. One of the things he said is, no, the market won't move up by 10 or 20% a year. And even with a very somewhat boring rate of 4 to 5%, he predicted the Dow Jones would end at 1 million at the end of this century. And he said that he expected the decade to be one that didn't really go anywhere, and he has been right. And he said the only strategy that would probably work well is a long short portfolio. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out, well, wait a minute, if I buy long and I sell short, and if I kind of balance that portfolio, how the hell do I make money? Because while the market's going up, half my portfolio is going up, the other half is going down. I didn't quite grasp the concept. It took me a while. Now, I have taken advantage of it many, many times in my life since. But these ETFs had made this so much easier. Now, because of the second commandment, which says, know thyself, some listeners probably felt, and I know they did, that this was too aggressive a strategy for the risk tolerance. They weren't going to short stocks or be bearish. They have to be long-term bullish. Over the long term, the market goes up. True. And it will be. The Dow Jones will reach 1 million by the end of the century, based on one of the experts that really knows. For the remainder of the year, those people that said this is too aggressive for their risk tolerance, they watched a potential 10 or more percent return slip away because they didn't create this hedged portfolio. You see, hedging, folks, is not a bad word. A hedge is taking a position to eliminate some risk. And this fairly low-risk portfolio, I didn't say no risk, I didn't say guaranteed, and I didn't say it will make money. It's a low-risk portfolio, relatively speaking, because you've eliminated some of the risk by having both long and short. it allows you to earn a return of about 25% per year or more, if done properly. Now, in the next 2 months after that show, we covered some important fundamentals, like measuring your performance. You don't know where you're going if you don't know where you've been. Asset classes. Remember, we even called that show Investing with Class. Then we covered toxic assets versus IGAs, income-generating assets, in our show about Rich Dad, Poor Dad, kind of a follow-on to that wonderful book. Now, in the last 2 months, we've had three outstanding guests. Our first in that series was Hugh Massey, discussing financial DNA, contrasting that to wealth DNA. And it really is a great way to know thyself, the second commandment. And that is a reminder, I have everything ready and have not posted my financial DNA results on the Wealth DNA radio show. I will put that on my to-do list again and get it up there shortly so you can take a look at what the results look like. It is a good investment in yourself. Now, we had Pat Huddleston as our second speaker in that series, our speaker guest, excuse me, talking about being a vigilant investor and avoiding being scammed. That's important. Could you imagine if you gave a lot of your money to Bernie Madoff? You would be much worse off today than you were when you handed him the money. The morning after that show with Pat Huddleston was another day that I'll remember where I was when my father died. He died at the age of 99. Quietly as he dozed off in his bed. I won't belabor a sad moment in my life, but we'll share one key lesson that each of us can learn from his life. It's about longevity. He lived to the age of 99, and there are only two known strategies. Again, something you want to write down and take to heart. Check it, research it. Don't necessarily trust me on this, because I'm not an expert in health and longevity, but I've done some research. The financial stuff, you can trust me, but here, assume that I'm not an expert on health and longevity, so do a little research. Anyway, there are two known strategies for increasing your longevity. One is to be born in a family with longevity. My father and I were, but none of us can control that. So the problem with that strategy, it's out of our control. But that gets us to the second strategy, which we can control. And that second strategy is what I would summarize as calorie deprivation. There's been 50 or more years of research done on this topic. It's time-consuming. They've done it in all sorts of organisms and animals moving their way up. And as I recall, they're working on apes right now as the closest analogy to human beings. And that research will take 25 years to be conclusive because it takes a while to get the data, right? But anyway, what they found throughout this research, after the various organisms at the beginning and later animals, is that if they consume 25% fewer calories, and yes, teachers and English majors, you said, finally you got something right. He says knowledge instead of canology, but 25% fewer calories, not less calories, is 25% fewer calories. So if you consume 25% fewer calories than recommended, you will increase your longevity by about 20 to 25%. Wow. I didn't say a month or two. I said 20 to 25%. So each of us can add 10 to 25 years to our lifespan, depending on your current age, by eating not only the right stuff, but far less of it. All right, unfortunately, I don't have the chat page up here. Somehow we had a problem getting that up. But anyways, I was hoping to get some of your comments from... I think, are we getting up here? We are. I am getting some of the comments here, but I'm not getting the full chat window. So anyway, it's you can put your comments in. I will see them, but unfortunately, the chat window where we can kind of converse and get your feedback isn't there. Okay, our third guest in that series was Danny Kofke on Being Wealthy on a Small Budget. In those last few shows, we suggested some great books for people on your shopping list. And there's still time to get them, that post-Christmas gift. Now, for going back to this ETF, the August 22nd show, and I talked about it several times subsequently. For those brave listeners who decided to follow that bull bear strategy or portfolio that I discussed, you've been nicely rewarded. As I keep saying, you'll never lose money taking profits. And with that nice rise in the stock market we've seen really since about mid-October, you probably have a large position in bear funds like, and I'm going to name some of the symbols here. These are symbols, not stock names. SPXU, BGZ, TZA, FAZ, YANG, EPV, or maybe a little bit less aggressive, QID or SDS. All of these are 2X or 3X funds. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to listen to that show. I mentioned, I believe, all of those on that show, probably several others. Well, I know I mentioned several others. But they will really make money, those bear positions, when the market drops back down. After a nice run-up since mid-October, did I tell you that the market will go down? I should check my notes, but I believe I'm allowed to say that. But what I'm not allowed to tell, so I will not, is when. That begins me to today's final topic. What's in store for 2012? And Pete, it does look like we'll end pretty much on time today. I'm on schedule. I was a little bit concerned we might run over the hour. Now, let me remind our radio audience, you're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. So, what's in store for 2012? Our fourth topic for today, unless you call me and add another topic or a question. I continuously collect information, so I'm not going to tell you exactly how the year will unfold. And if you look back to a year ago, I probably shared some of that. I was very optimistic. I was accumulating more stocks and trying to buy more properties to be fully invested because I really felt pretty optimistic. The world seemed to be in recovery. The U.S. was entering another election year that seems to take 5 years rather than one. And we knew the politicians would want to spend lots of taxpayers' money to win votes for re-election. And if the U.S. markets are going up, the rest of the world markets seem to follow along. Not all of them, but most of them. I was betting inflation would start to be felt and interest rates would start to rise. That's where it looked around this time a year ago. Now, by mid-year of 2011, so first let me give you kind of a review because it's important for looking into 2012. That was my view. The good news about the markets is you don't have to buy once at the beginning of the year and live with what you planned on. And by the way, the markets are pretty much where they started. So if you invested a lot at the beginning of the year, if you did nothing and just held it, you would end up pretty much where you started. That could change this week. We could still see a major uptick. And for my early optimism, we'd have to rise about 20% for me to be on target. But the important thing is I could readjust. And mid-year in 2011, the situation looked much worse. I started selling everything that had a profit. And even stocks that had a loss, I was selling if they hit a recent high. I hate losses. But that's also when I started to relook at things and say, are there some better ways, other ways for me to short the market? You see, the problem with investing in an IRA, like I do, most of my financial investments done within an IRA, you can't do shorting. Now, you knew that from our prior shows with JP Dada and when we discussed margin as a source of OPM. So twice we've talked about this concept this year, so I won't repeat that. But basically, with an IRA, you can't short stocks. So I had to find other alternatives because I use an IRA. That's when the bear funds came to mind. Now, by the fourth quarter, things started to look a bit better. And as I mentioned, since the middle of October, the market's done pretty well. It's recovered from the damage done in that third quarter. Given the amount of volatility, that strategy that I decided to start following and recommended here of a long or bullish positions accumulated when the market's down, well, then selling them and buying more bearish positions when the market's up, like it is now, that strategy has worked extremely well. All right, so what does that all have to do with 2012? Well, what I'm telling you is what I see now could change during the year, but let me give you my best view based on what I know from my various advisors. 2012 will likely look a lot like 2011. Things are going okay now. The market will probably head up. The first half I expect to be pretty positive. Could be 3 months, could be 6 months, could be 10 months. And I will use those increases to sell some more of my long positions or my bull positions and accumulate more bear positions. I hope to position myself somewhere around mid-year at about 50% bullish and 50% bearish positions. In other words, neutral, ready for the market going sideways, but also ready for it going up or down. I unfortunately think that in the third or fourth quarter, we could see signs that the world can't keep kicking the debt and the deficit cans down the road, which they've been trying to do. Kick it down the road. Let our kids and let our grandkids worry about it. That time of reckoning is coming. We know that. But eventually the markets will say, oh, you know what? They're coming sooner, not mañana. The caution here is that that process could be either long or it could be painful. Or what's even worse, it could be both long and painful. That's not a time I want to be heavily invested in the stock or bond market, and thus I'd like to be about a 50% bull and 50% bear. Maybe even if the signals continue to tell me that that's true, I might go more bearish, the most bearish I've ever been in my life. The bad news behind the scenario I'm painting, actually it's very, very bad news, that I foresee is that there will be a major shift in the standard of living around the world. The developed world, when I talk about the developed world, and I'll try to use that summary in the coming months rather than mentioning all of the names, but I'd say that would include the U.S., Europe, Canada, Australia, and Japan. That's really the developed world. They will see a major deterioration in their overall standard of living. That's not good news, folks. And you see, the people who don't take the necessary steps to prepare will be living far worse off than before. Among those, I expect to be those that count on the government to keep paying them 80 to 100% of their income. They will be the losers. There will be, as always, in every good time and bad time, there will be winners. I plan to be among them. And I'll do everything I can prepare you, our listeners, to improve your standard of living dramatically, not just relative to others. While I'm being gloomy, and I'm not trying to be gloomy here ending the year, I'm sharing what I'm looking for toward the second half of next year, or maybe into 2013 and beyond. One of the casualties in that future, and I'm not talking about in 2012, are what I and many others refer to as the biggest Ponzi schemes. They are the government Social Security and Social Retirement plans. Now, if you are an investor with Bernie Madoff or some other of the Ponzi schemes we discussed and shared with Pat Huddleston here, you probably felt like when giving him the money, you would get back what you invested plus a nice return. Nothing could go wrong, after all. Bernie had a great reputation when he was the head of the NASDAQ stock exchange. Well-regarded, well-known, wealthy. I mean, he wouldn't steal your money, would he? Well, when that Ponzi scheme became unsustainable, everyone that invested realized they were in big trouble. We're talking into the billions. Somehow, the participants, and that includes all of us, we really don't have much choice unless we're not earning money, in the Social Security or Social Retirement plans, depending on what they're called in various countries, feel like these government programs are an exception. They are a Ponzi scheme. We take money from you today to pay people that invested before. And nothing could go wrong because the government endorses them, set them up, and must be safe. My view is simple. In God we trust, but not the government. I hope I'm pleasantly surprised and the governments around the world find a way, but it won't be easy. Now, there is one bit of optimism I'd like to share with you that could change this scenario dramatically. So my mild optimism from the beginning of the year could become wild optimism. From mild to wild. I like that. I'll have to remember that one. All right. So from mild optimism, maybe I'll become wildly optimistic. There's one big driver that could change the scenario I painted of things slipping later in 2012 and becoming very bad after that. The big driver could be the U.S. housing market recover. The U.S. housing market. Because, by the way, the same thing will carry out to the rest of the world. Now, it will either happen because the banks adopt the TACT program that we've been working on for years, and we know it works, or because the supply-demand rebalancing that has been occurring as housing providers, like my company, they help the housing market recover, not the government. You see, when the government gets involved, things look good for a while, and then go south. And we saw that already with the first uptick in the market in April of 2009, which faded when the government money left. So housing providers could be the impetus instead of the government to help the housing market recover. And they're already doing it. The question is, can they keep building that momentum? Now, in January, I planned to have H.L. Quist back on this show, and you'll remember he was on the show in 2010, and I didn't have an opportunity to get him on this past year. I did talk to him the other day, and he said he should be able to make it. Haven't gotten his confirmation yet, but I'm hoping maybe even our first show in January. He'll be on. He'll spend more time on the macroeconomics the world leaders have before them. I've been working on that. I know he does. He spends most of his time on those kinds of concepts. You see, there's only 4 to 5 things governments around the world can do. None of them is a silver bullet that makes the debt problems go away and that we all live happily and ever after. H.L. Quist, by the way, is one of my key economics and stock market advisors. And you'll recall he was on this show. When he was on this show, he shared some of his thoughts, and he's fairly open. I'll be very specific with him. He will put out his January newsletter, which I subscribe to, and I can assure you I will read it carefully, word for word. And when he's on this show, I'll ask him to give you the essence straight from him at no cost to you. You don't have to pay to subscribe. Last time he was on, by the way, he gave a very nice special deal to become subscribers for our listeners. Hopefully he'll do something similar. I didn't ask him to do that, but he did. That was very nice. Anyway, let's wrap up the show and the year. If you've listened to every show this year, whether live or from the archives, you've taken advantage of more than 20 hours of information we prepared and shared with you. You have, I assure you, improved your wealth DNA, the question of the day. Now, if you take the next steps, and there are 3 of them, just 3 steps, you will be wealthy. First step, writing down and reviewing your resolutions for 2011. I'm going to move my microphone. Sorry for the noise there. Writing down and reviewing your resolutions for 2012. Secondly, take action on the strategies we shared and will share with you. And thirdly, take advantage of the fixed income strategies we teach in our Learn to Earn a Higher Return seminars. The stock market's fine, but the fixed income side, you could get yourself in big trouble in the financial markets in the years to come. With those 3 simple steps, over and over again, keep them going, desire and determination, you will be on track to becoming very wealthy. Now, for your 2012 New Year's resolutions, which I'm sure you're working on, especially after the show, I can suggest, well, one thing I already suggest is re-listen to our show from January on SMART goals, January of 2011. That'll help you put your resolutions together. But here are a couple suggestions. Bring your weight down below weight, your physical weight, below the norms for your height and age. You'll live longer and healthier. Take it from my father. Keep learning about financial and investing principles. Rather than watching some mindless TV shows, get some good books or listen to the archives of this show. Time will be much better spent. That I can guarantee. And of course, tune into this show every 2 weeks. You'll be challenged by us. We'll share good ideas with you. And we'll inspire you to be as wealthy as you can be. We haven't scheduled our next Learn to Earn a Higher Return seminar, and don't know exactly when we'll do that. Things are a bit hectic, lots going on, but that's good news. We'll put our resolutions together and a schedule for those seminars. But in the meantime, I'll gladly meet with you to share an overview. And I will be dedicating a future Wealth DNA radio show to do a multimedia version of that radio seminar on that topic. I don't know if it's ever been done in radio land before, but we're going to do it. Now, let me remind you, the next Wealth DNA radio show is the second Monday of January. That'll be Monday, January 9th, 2012. Got to adjust to that, right? Changing the 11s to 12s on all of your checks, all of your documents. It'll be at 8 o'clock Arizona time, as always. Same place, but not the same year. We will be discussing resolutions, options for the world economy, and how you should be investing in 2012 to take advantage of those trends. We're still in the process of scheduling some great guests for 2012. We have a long list and need to prioritize them. The archives of past shows and this one are available on www.wealthdna.us. If you haven't received emails reminding you about this show, just send an email to me at ron@wealthdna.us. So ron@wealthdna.us. We'll keep you posted about future shows and events. Or click the follow button. At the very top of the screen, there's a button underneath the Boomer and the Bass picture. Just say follow that, and they will keep you posted of the show and other great shows on this network. Get those resolutions written. Get ready for the next moves up and down in the stock markets. They will come as certainly as night follows day. Happy investing, and above all, I wish your family a very healthy and wealthy new year.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.